The History of the United States Secret Service. Currently sitting under the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Secret Service now performs duties that are far removed from its original purpose. During the latter half of the 19th century, approximately 35% of all currency in circulation in the United States was counterfeit. The government wanted to do something about the problem, and so legislation was prepared for a President Abraham Lincoln to sign that would enable the federal government to form a department to address the issue. This legislation was on the president's desk on the 15th of April 1865, the night Lincoln was assassinated. Even so, the Secret Service Division of the United States Treasury Department was formed in Washington, D.C. on the 5th of July 1865, with the Secretary of the Treasury, Hugh McCulloch, swearing in William P. Wood as its first chief and presenting him with a clear objective of suppressing counterfeit currency operations within the United States. At its inception, the Secret Service became only the fifth federal law enforcement agency in existence at the time, with the others being the United States Marshals Service, the Office of Instructions and Mail Depredations within the U.S. Post Office Department, which became the United States Postal Inspection Service, the United States Park Police, and the United States Customs Service. Although its initial mission was the suppression of counterfeit currency operations, it wouldn't be long before the Secret Service started to investigate other crimes, including bank robberies and even murder, mainly as a result of a lack of manpower in other services, particularly within the Marshals Service. After the Secret Service had been operating for about 35 years, it added another string to its bow, which became the main mission of the service is known for today, when, after President William McKinley was assassinated by a gunman at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York in September 1901, the Secret Service was asked by Congress to take on the role of presidential protection. The Secret Service took on the full-time role of presidential protection in 1902 and has provided the service to US presidents ever since. In its presidential protection role, the Secret Service has had some notable successes, some near misses, and at least one spectacular failure. The first of several near misses came soon after it took on the presidential protection role, when a man was captured and disarmed very close to the President William H. Taft in El Paso, Texas, in 1909. The second near miss also saw the first and to date only death of a Secret Service agent during an assassination attempt, when Private Leslie Kofelt was shot 3 times in the chest with a Luger pistol during an attempt on the life of President Harry S. Truman in Washington, D.C. in 1950. Although mortally wounded, Kofelt managed to return fire, killing one of the would-be assassins. And on March the 30th, 1981, Special Agent Tim McCarthy took a bullet in the abdomen whilst protecting President Ronald Reagan, who was also shot and wounded in an assassination attempt by John Hinckley Jr. in Washington, D.C. Fortunately, both the President and Agent McCarthy made a full recovery. Of course, the spectacular failure came on the 22nd of November 1963, when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas, Texas. The scope of the protection role that the Secret Service provides was expanded following the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy in 1968 to include the protection of presidential and vice presidential candidates and nominees. Although the protection of the president and his or her family and other high-ranking officials within the U.S. government is the most visible of the duties of the United States Secret Service, it still stands out as a bit of an oddity on the list of its official duties. Since its inception, the Secret Service has continued its original mission of suppressing counterfeit currency operations, and in 1984, the Comprehensive Crime Control Act saw these duties expand to include credit card fraud and computer fraud. The History of the United States Secret Service. Currently sitting under the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Secret Service now performs duties that are far removed from its original purpose. During the latter half of the 19th century, approximately 35% of all currency in circulation in the United States was counterfeit. The government wanted to do something about the problem, and so legislation was prepared for a President Abraham Lincoln to sign that would enable the federal government to form a department to address the issue. This legislation was on the president's desk on the 15th of April 1865, the night Lincoln was assassinated. Even so, the Secret Service Division of the United States Treasury Department was formed in Washington, D.C. on the 5th of July 1865, with the Secretary of the Treasury, Hugh McCulloch, swearing in William P. Wood as its first chief and presenting him with a clear objective of suppressing counterfeit currency operations within the United States. At its inception, the Secret Service became only the fifth federal law enforcement agency in existence at the time, with the others being the United States Marshals Service, the Office of Instructions and Mail Depredations within the U.S. Post Office Department, which became the United States Postal Inspection Service, the United States Park Police, and the United States Customs Service. Although its initial mission was the suppression of counterfeit currency operations, it wouldn't be long before the Secret Service started to investigate other crimes, including bank robberies and even murder, mainly as a result of a lack of manpower in other services, particularly within the Marshals Service. After the Secret Service had been operating for about 35 years, it added another string to its bow, which became the main mission of the service is known for today, when, after President William McKinley was assassinated by a gunman at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York in September 1901, the Secret Service was asked by Congress to take on the role of presidential protection. The Secret Service took on the full-time role of presidential protection in 1902 and has provided the service to US presidents ever since. In its presidential protection role, the Secret Service has had some notable successes, some near misses, and at least one spectacular failure. The first of several near misses came soon after it took on the presidential protection role, when a man was captured and disarmed very close to the President William H. Taft in El Paso, Texas, in 1909. The second near miss also saw the first and to date only death of a Secret Service agent during an assassination attempt, when Private Leslie Kofelt was shot 3 times in the chest with a Luger pistol during an attempt on the life of President Harry S. Truman in Washington, D.C. in 1950. Although mortally wounded, Kofelt managed to return fire, killing one of the would-be assassins. And on March the 30th, 1981, Special Agent Tim McCarthy took a bullet in the abdomen whilst protecting President Ronald Reagan, who was also shot and wounded in an assassination attempt by John Hinckley Jr. in Washington, D.C. Fortunately, both the President and Agent McCarthy made a full recovery. Of course, the spectacular failure came on the 22nd of November 1963, when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas, Texas. The scope of the protection role that the Secret Service provides was expanded following the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy in 1968 to include the protection of presidential and vice presidential candidates and nominees. Although the protection of the president and his or her family and other high-ranking officials within the U.S. government is the most visible of the duties of the United States Secret Service, it still stands out as a bit of an oddity on the list of its official duties. Since its inception, the Secret Service has continued its original mission of suppressing counterfeit currency operations, and in 1984, the Comprehensive Crime Control Act saw these duties expand to include credit card fraud and computer fraud. The History of the United States Secret Service. Currently sitting under the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Secret Service now performs duties that are far removed from its original purpose. During the latter half of the 19th century, approximately 35% of all currency in circulation in the United States was counterfeit. The government wanted to do something about the problem, and so legislation was prepared for a President Abraham Lincoln to sign that would enable the federal government to form a department to address the issue. This legislation was on the president's desk on the 15th of April 1865, the night Lincoln was assassinated. Even so, the Secret Service Division of the United States Treasury Department was formed in Washington, D.C. on the 5th of July 1865, with the Secretary of the Treasury, Hugh McCulloch, swearing in William P. Wood as its first chief and presenting him with a clear objective of suppressing counterfeit currency operations within the United States. At its inception, the Secret Service became only the fifth federal law enforcement agency in existence at the time, with the others being the United States Marshals Service, the Office of Instructions and Mail Depredations within the U.S. Post Office Department, which became the United States Postal Inspection Service, the United States Park Police, and the United States Customs Service. Although its initial mission was the suppression of counterfeit currency operations, it wouldn't be long before the Secret Service started to investigate other crimes, including bank robberies and even murder, mainly as a result of a lack of manpower in other services, particularly within the Marshals Service. After the Secret Service had been operating for about 35 years, it added another string to its bow, which became the main mission of that the service is known for today, when, after President William McKinley was assassinated by a gunman at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York in September 1901, the Secret Service was asked by Congress to take on the role of presidential protection. The Secret Service took on the full-time role of presidential protection in 1902 and has provided the service to US presidents ever since. In its presidential protection role, the Secret Service has had some notable successes, some near misses, and at least one spectacular failure. The first of several near misses came soon after it took on the presidential protection role, when a man was captured and disarmed very close to the President William H. Taft in El Paso, Texas, in 1909. The second near miss also saw the first and to date only death of a Secret Service agent during an assassination attempt, when Private Leslie Kofelt was shot 3 times in the chest with a Luger pistol during an attempt on the life of President Harry S. Truman in Washington, D.C. in 1950. Although mortally wounded, Kofelt managed to return fire, killing one of the would-be assassins. And on March the 30th, 1981, Special Agent Tim McCarthy took a bullet in the abdomen whilst protecting President Ronald Reagan, who was also shot and wounded in an assassination attempt by John Hinckley Jr. in Washington, D.C. Fortunately, both the President and Agent McCarthy made a full recovery. Of course, the spectacular failure came on the 22nd of November 1963, when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald in Dallas, Texas. The scope of the protection role that the Secret Service provides was expanded following the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy in 1968 to include the protection of presidential and vice presidential candidates and nominees. Although the protection of the president and his or her family and other high-ranking officials within the U.S. government is the most visible of the duties of the United States Secret Service, it still stands out as a bit of an oddity on the list of its official duties. Since its inception, the Secret Service has continued its original mission of suppressing counterfeit currency operations, and in 1984, the Comprehensive Crime Control Act saw these duties expand to include credit card fraud and computer fraud.
Mountain lions are now posing for their close-ups. Researchers based in the Greater Yellowstone National Park area have figured out a new way to identify these cats by using facial recognition. And this method is proving to be a better way to monitor these highly elusive creatures.
Mountain lions are just really, really hard to directly observe. They're just so cryptic and secretive. And so we've had to find these non-invasive methods, they're often called, to get information about a mountain lion population.
That's Peter Alexander, a research biologist based in Kelly, Wyoming, who led the research project. One tool that researchers like Alexander are using is a camera trap. The traps, which are about the size of a shoebox or even a coffee cup, are attached to something that's along the animal's regular path, like a tree that the puma has territorially scraped. When motion is detected, the trap gets triggered, resulting in a snapshot of the mountain lion as it strolls by. The cameras even have an infrared flash so that nighttime photos are captured without disturbing the animal. Researchers around the world use this type of tool to estimate population numbers and overall abundance of species. They comb through the images, sometimes using machine learning algorithms, and analyze them to identify individuals. But according to Alexander, there's a problem with this method when it comes to IDing mountain lions.
Tigers, that's kind of the classic example of using cameras for individual identity, because those stripes, they're like a fingerprint. And so a cougar, they do not have any of those really conspicuous stripes on their sides.
That's because nearly all pumas around the world, with exceptions of distinguishing things like scars, have light, sandy-colored fur down their sides. The scientific name for a mountain lion, Puma concolor, literally translates to one color. This lack of unique coloration on the sides of their bodies means that researchers like Alexander can't usually tell if one puma crosses a camera trap five times or if five individual animals pass by. However, it's a different story when it comes to their facial markings. They're kind of a showstopper.
Get a close-up image of a face. They're stunning, just those huge eyes. And there's a lot of detail and whisker patterns and all sorts of stuff. They really are beautiful.
So Alexander and his team decided to capitalize on the dramatic facial features of mountain lions. They added a few gadgets to their camera traps so that when motion was detected, a cougar kitten call was played. This noise repeatedly piqued the interest of passerby pumas so that they looked up long enough for the camera trap to grab a face shot. Five independent investigators reviewed the puma headshots and attempted to ID the individual animals. Compared to the traditional side-angle camera trap, the new attention-getting device was about 92% more accurate. This work was recently published in the journal Ecology and Evolution. This study is an important step on the path to being able to more confidently identify and track animals in a really scalable way. Snapping headshots of mountain lions also opens up new opportunities to involve AI techniques, like the facial recognition technology used by airport security. This could really expedite the image analyzation process for researchers.
I think that's very possible. That could be a really useful technique in the future. There have been a lot of other facial recognition studies done on animals, but it's never been with a camera trap. So that was kind of the unique thing about this study, was merging these two ideas.
And beyond being able to more precisely understand how many mountain lions are in an area, Alexander says that this new camera trap method could be used for tracking other critters that lack distinguishing side colors, but have unique features elsewhere. This includes vulnerable species like wolverines, pine martens, and even grizzly bears. That's worth saying cheese for the camera, don't you think? Mountain lions are now posing for their close-ups. Researchers based in the Greater Yellowstone National Park area have figured out a new way to identify these cats by using facial recognition. And this method is proving to be a better way to monitor these highly elusive creatures.
Mountain lions are just really, really hard to directly observe. They're just so cryptic and secretive. And so we've had to find these non-invasive methods, they're often called, to get information about a mountain lion population.
That's Peter Alexander, a research biologist based in Kelly, Wyoming, who led the research project. One tool that researchers like Alexander are using is a camera trap. The traps, which are about the size of a shoebox or even a coffee cup, are attached to something that's along the animal's regular path, like a tree that the puma has territorially scraped. When motion is detected, the trap gets triggered, resulting in a snapshot of the mountain lion as it strolls by. The cameras even have an infrared flash so that nighttime photos are captured without disturbing the animal. Researchers around the world use this type of tool to estimate population numbers and overall abundance of species. They comb through the images, sometimes using machine learning algorithms, and analyze them to identify individuals. But according to Alexander, there's a problem with this method when it comes to IDing mountain lions.
Tigers, that's kind of the classic example of using cameras for individual identity, because those stripes, they're like a fingerprint. And so a cougar, they do not have any of those really conspicuous stripes on their sides.
That's because nearly all pumas around the world, with exceptions of distinguishing things like scars, have light, sandy-colored fur down their sides. The scientific name for a mountain lion, Puma concolor, literally translates to one color. This lack of unique coloration on the sides of their bodies means that researchers like Alexander can't usually tell if one puma crosses a camera trap five times or if five individual animals pass by. However, it's a different story when it comes to their facial markings. They're kind of a showstopper.
Get a close-up image of a face. They're stunning, just those huge eyes, and there's a lot of detail and whisker patterns and all sorts of stuff. They really are beautiful.
So Alexander and his team decided to capitalize on the dramatic facial features of mountain lions. They added a few gadgets to their camera traps so that when motion was detected, a cougar kitten call was played. This noise repeatedly piqued the interest of passerby pumas so that they looked up long enough for the camera trap to grab a face shot. Five independent investigators reviewed the puma headshots and attempted to ID the individual animals. Compared to the traditional side-angle camera trap, the new attention-getting device was about 92% more accurate. This work was recently published in the journal Ecology and Evolution. This study is an important step on the path to being able to more confidently identify and track animals in a really scalable way. Snapping headshots of mountain lions also opens up new opportunities to involve AI techniques, like the facial recognition technology used by airport security. This could really expedite the image analyzation process for researchers.
I think that's very possible. That could be a really useful technique in the future. There have been a lot of other facial recognition studies done on animals, but it's never been with a camera trap. So that was kind of the unique thing about this study, was merging these two ideas.
And beyond being able to more precisely understand how many mountain lions are in an area, Alexander says that this new camera trap method could be used for tracking other critters that lack distinguishing side colors, but have unique features elsewhere. This includes vulnerable species like wolverines, pine martens, and even grizzly bears. That's worth saying cheese for the camera, don't you think? Mountain lions are now posing for their close-ups. Researchers based in the Greater Yellowstone National Park area have figured out a new way to identify these cats by using facial recognition. And this method is proving to be a better way to monitor these highly elusive creatures.
Mountain lions are just really, really hard to directly observe. They're just so cryptic and secretive. And so we've had to find these non-invasive methods, they're often called, to get information about a mountain lion population.
That's Peter Alexander, a research biologist based in Kelly, Wyoming, who led the research project. One tool that researchers like Alexander are using is a camera trap. The traps, which are about the size of a shoebox or even a coffee cup, are attached to something that's along the animal's regular path, like a tree that the puma has territorially scraped. When motion is detected, the trap gets triggered, resulting in a snapshot of the mountain lion as it strolls by. The cameras even have an infrared flash so that nighttime photos are captured without disturbing the animal. Researchers around the world use this type of tool to estimate population numbers and overall abundance of species. They comb through the images, sometimes using machine learning algorithms, and analyze them to identify individuals. But according to Alexander, there's a problem with this method when it comes to IDing mountain lions.
Tigers, that's kind of the classic example of using cameras for individual identity, because those stripes, they're like a fingerprint. And so a cougar, they do not have any of those really conspicuous stripes on their sides.
That's because nearly all pumas around the world, with exceptions of distinguishing things like scars, have light, sandy-colored fur down their sides. The scientific name for a mountain lion, Puma concolor, literally translates to one color. This lack of unique coloration on the sides of their bodies means that researchers like Alexander can't usually tell if one puma crosses a camera trap five times or if five individual animals pass by. However, it's a different story when it comes to their facial markings. They're kind of a showstopper.
Get a close-up image of a face. They're stunning, just those huge eyes. And there's a lot of detail and whisker patterns and all sorts of stuff. They really are beautiful.
So Alexander and his team decided to capitalize on the dramatic facial features of mountain lions. They added a few gadgets to their camera traps so that when motion was detected, a cougar kitten call was played. This noise repeatedly piqued the interest of passerby pumas so that they looked up long enough for the camera trap to grab a face shot. Five independent investigators reviewed the puma headshots and attempted to ID the individual animals. Compared to the traditional side-angle camera trap, the new attention-getting device was about 92% more accurate. This work was recently published in the journal Ecology and Evolution. This study is an important step on the path to being able to more confidently identify and track animals in a really scalable way. Snapping headshots of mountain lions also opens up new opportunities to involve AI techniques, like the facial recognition technology used by airport security. This could really expedite the image analyzation process for researchers.
I think that's very possible that could be a really useful technique in the future. There have been a lot of other facial recognition studies done on animals, but it's never been with a camera trap. So that was kind of the unique thing about this study, was merging these two ideas.
And beyond being able to more precisely understand how many mountain lions are in an area, Alexander says that this new camera trap method could be used for tracking other critters that lack distinguishing side colors, but have unique features elsewhere. This includes vulnerable species like wolverines, pine martens, and even grizzly bears. That's worth saying cheese for the camera, don't you think?
Imagine a healthy ocean, its abundance and vitality restored. And not just any ocean. Your ocean. Every corner of every ocean around the world, vibrant, abundant, and productive. Healthy seabeds. Fish stocks recovered. Monitored wisely. Fished sustainably. And feeding many more people than they do now. The good news is that it is possible. But we are standing in our own way. We are paying huge sums of money, public money, to keep damaging and destructive fishing activities afloat. Government subsidies are keeping fishing boats fishing, even when there are too few fish left for fishing to be profitable. These subsidies create tensions between competing fishermen and nations. And they also fund the ongoing destruction of the natural world on which we all depend. But all is not lost. We can turn this around right now. Your governments have been tasked with negotiating new global rules on fisheries subsidies by the end of this year to set us all on a more sustainable course. The World Trade Organization has previously negotiated global rules for government subsidies to industry and farming. Now it's time to put an end to subsidies that harm our oceans too. Around the globe, small-scale projects are already paving a way forward, showing how investment in local coastal communities can lead to remarkable recoveries under the waves. A global deal to end harmful fishery subsidies is the next vital step in the restoration of our oceans to their former abundance and diversity. Reaching the right deal might not be easy, but a sustainable future for the oceans and ourselves is within reach. We must seize this opportunity and act now to ensure a healthier future for each and every one of us forever. Imagine a healthy ocean, its abundance and vitality restored. And not just any ocean. Your ocean. Every corner of every ocean around the world, vibrant, abundant, and productive. Healthy seabeds. Fish stocks recovered. Monitored wisely. Fished sustainably. And feeding many more people than they do now. The good news is that it is possible. But we are standing in our own way. We are paying huge sums of money, public money, to keep damaging and destructive fishing activities afloat. Government subsidies are keeping fishing boats fishing, even when there are too few fish left for fishing to be profitable. These subsidies create tensions between competing fishermen and nations. And they also fund the ongoing destruction of the natural world on which we all depend. But all is not lost. We can turn this around right now. Your government governments have been tasked with negotiating new global rules on fisheries subsidies by the end of this year to set us all on a more sustainable course. The World Trade Organization has previously negotiated global rules for government subsidies to industry and farming. Now it's time to put an end to subsidies that harm our oceans too. Around the globe, small-scale projects are already paving a way forward, showing how investment in local coastal communities can lead to remarkable recoveries under the waves. A global deal to end harmful fishery subsidies is the next vital step in the restoration of our oceans to their former abundance and diversity. Reaching the right deal might not be easy, but a sustainable future for the oceans and ourselves is within reach. We must seize this opportunity and act now to ensure a healthier future for each and every one of us forever. Imagine a healthy ocean, its abundance and vitality restored. And not just any ocean, your ocean. Every corner of every ocean around the world, vibrant, abundant, and productive. Healthy seabeds, fish stocks recovered. Monitored wisely, fished sustainably, and feeding many more people than they do now. The good news is that it is possible. But we are standing in our own way. We are paying huge sums of money, public money, to keep damaging and destructive fishing activities afloat. Government subsidies are keeping fishing boats fishing, even when there are too few fish left for fishing to be profitable. These subsidies create tensions between competing fishermen and nations. And they also fund the ongoing destruction of the natural world on which we all depend. But all is not lost. We can turn this around right now. Your governments have been tasked with negotiating new global rules on fisheries subsidies by the end of this year to set us all on a more sustainable course. The World Trade Organization has previously negotiated global rules for government subsidies to industry and farming. Now it's time to put an end to subsidies that harm our oceans too. Around the globe, small-scale projects are already paving a way forward, showing how investment in local coastal communities can lead to remarkable recoveries under the waves. A global deal to end harmful fishery subsidies is the next vital step in the restoration of our oceans to their former abundance and diversity. Reaching the right deal might not be easy, but a sustainable future for the oceans and ourselves is within reach. We must seize this opportunity and act now to ensure a healthier future for each and every one of us forever.